Now I want to set the scene for you today. It's not going to be a message in the normal sense, but really a journeying through a 24-hour period, a tumultuous, incredible 24-hour period. I want you to remember, for ancient Jews, the new day didn't begin at midnight, but began at sunset. So we are in the, past the middle of a Jewish day now. Last night, around Melbourne, around Victoria, around the world, Jews met to celebrate once again Passover, when as a nation they remember back millennia and recall God's salvation, his bringing them out of Egypt. They remember that night when death visited Egypt, but something protected their firstborn, and it was the blood of lambs, spotless lambs, on doorposts and lintels of their doors. And so for millennia, Jews have remembered their salvation from Egypt. But almost precisely 2,000 years ago, the man Jesus drew his disciples together with him to celebrate Passover. Jesus, knowing full well what lay ahead of him that very day. So in the evening they met around the Passover meal. And then at the end of that meal, he instituted what we will be celebrating this morning, what we call the Lord's table or communion. Jesus knew full well what the symbolism of this new feast represented. His body, his blood. And in that gathering of 12 of his hand-picked closest friends was one who had already in his heart turned from Jesus. Yet Jesus welcomed him to this table that is triumphant love. We know that Jesus, in that intimate moment with Judas, said to him basically, do what you're going to do. Doesn't exactly send him out with a blessing, but neither does he curse him. Triumphant love. And so while the disciples of the 11 and Jesus continue together in the dark of night now, Judas goes to the high priest and the council. And they are in anticipation of what they now will be able to do. The scene shifts, doesn't it, to a garden. We normally think of a garden as a place of refreshment. But not this garden, not this night, not for Jesus. And he is in agony, anticipating what lay ahead now just a few hours. His closest disciples fail him. They just are tired, they sleep, as Jesus alone grapples with what lay just ahead of him. Then the scene shifts, doesn't it? Because suddenly there are torches in the distance. There's sounds. And the betrayer is here with soldiers and leaders. And with a kiss, Jesus is betrayed. With a kiss, the sign of love, the sign of friendship, Jesus is betrayed. And his remaining hand-picked team scurry off. And he is left alone with those that want to do him ill. Jesus does not fight. An ear is cut off, but Jesus restores it and says, put away the sword. Jesus willingly goes with those who will abuse him. Triumphant love. Again, in the dead of night, the scene shifts, and now we're in the religious court, and the high priest is there, and his council, and others, and soldiers. There's abuse. There's mocking. Finally, his enemies have him where they want him. No crowds around. No crowds around. Listening, hanging on Jesus' words. To become upset if he is touched. In the dead of night, alone with those that chose to be his enemies. Jesus is confronted. But there's a dilemma. There's various witnesses, but their accounts amount to nothing. The religious leaders, although they have been intent for a long time that Jesus should die, they realize they need something substantial against this man, Jesus, this miracle worker, this speaker of life. And finally, the high priest simply asks him, are you then the Son of God? And Jesus' reply, you say that I am. Slightly ambiguous, but enough. There is a howl of rage, cries of blasphemy. And now the full outrage of murder pours out of their mouths. At the same time, in the courtyard, there is that Peter that we can identify with so well. Full of boast, but when the time comes, can't live up to those boasts. And first of all, just to a servant girl. He says, no, I've never known him. I don't know anything about Jesus. I don't belong to him. And another two times, he denies ever knowing the one that he identified as the Christ. And the cock crows. Dawn is about to break. And Peter's heart breaks. As the realization that he has denied his friend, his Lord, his Jesus. We know later that there is a restoration because love is triumphant. And Peter is restored. But that's a story for another day. So now, as dawn is breaking and the high priest and the council and the soldiers and this select crowd of those who are intent that Jesus should die lead him off to Pilate. They know that they need the Roman approval to do that which they would do if they could that instant. In Jewish law, they would have stoned him, Jesus. But now under Roman rule, they cannot act arbitrarily. And so we find Jesus before Pilate, that mob, that which was a crowd, perhaps some who had welcomed Jesus in just a few days earlier on what we call Palm Sunday amongst them, are now calling, "Crucify him, crucify him." Pilate examines this man, Jesus, this one he'd heard about undoubtedly, and cannot find anything sufficient for death. And he says this to the leaders, he says this to the crowd. But all they can do is call out, "Crucify him, crucify him, crucify him." They don't want to hear. They only want to see this man dead. And finally, justice is totally perverted. A guilty one is freed, and the innocent one is condemned to death. And this weak man, Pilate, perhaps afraid of his reputation if something gets back to Rome, gives way to the mob, gives way to injustice. And although he tries to wash his hands of the whole thing, and the Jews say, "We will accept the blame," nonetheless, he remains implicated in this outrage. And the scene shifts again. And Jesus is found in the hands of hardened soldiers. There's no mercy here. There's no mercy here. For the soldiers, this is just a bit of sport. We see this in people who've been brutalized by violence, that violence is in their heart, and they take pleasure in causing pain, in derision, and finally in the act of bringing death. And Jesus suffers all that as he's scourged, as a crown of thorns is pressed in on his head, as he's beaten, slapped, spat on, mocked. And Jesus is finally crucified. And those hands that had brought healing are nailed. Those feet that had traveled around Israel bringing good news are nailed. And he, in shame, stripped virtually naked, hangs, bleeding in agony. Nowhere in this journey has Jesus flinched from what lay before him. Even in the garden, as he said, you know, if it's possible, if there's any other way, but nonetheless, your will be done. And Jesus, in a sense, with arms outstretched, accepts all that is thrown at him and embraces it, because he is the one who takes the sin of the world, takes away the sin of the world. Well, Jesus, as he begun to be crucified, amazingly said, "Father, forgive them, for they really just don't know what they're doing." As they sacrificed, as they killed their Messiah. Triumphant love that will forgive the most heinous action. And now on the cross, you'll notice that there's another two crosses. They've been there all the time. These men deserve to be there under the law of the time. Two thieves, two scoundrels, the ones hardened and bitter and in pain and agony and just rails at Jesus. Jesus, with that sign that Pilate had put above him, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. But the other thief is different, and recognizes that he's there justly, but this man Jesus, somehow he knew that this Jesus, perhaps he'd heard about him, perhaps he had heard Jesus, perhaps he had heard, seen Jesus healing people, accepting the outcasts. And this man is different. And he says to Jesus, remember that sign, Jesus of Nazareth, King of the Jews. And this thief is different. And he says to Jesus, well, first of all, he says to the other thief, "You don't know what you're talking about. We are here justly. This man is innocent." And then he says to Jesus, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus reply, "Truly, I tell you, this day, you'll be with me in paradise." Triumphant love. Love that in the midst of all that is happening accepts this man and reaches out to this man and brings salvation to this one who, like Jesus, is about to die. And of course there is Mary and the beloved apostle just over in the distance there, and Jesus hasn't forgotten his mother nor the beloved disciple John. And an act of love and compassion and care, he says to the disciple, "Behold your mother." To his mother, "Behold your son." In other words, "John, take care of her. Always considerate, always thinking of others in love, in the midst of his own agony." And then comes that cry, that profound, heart-wrenching cry, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And in that moment, the full weight of the burden that Jesus bears comes upon him. That ultimate burden, which is separation from the beloved Father. And then there's that cry, It is finished. It is finished. His life isn't taken from him. He yields his life up. There's been darkness, strange darkness on the land since midday, and now it's around 3 in the afternoon. The Romans would normally leave crucified ones on the cross until they finally expired, which could take days. But in deference to the Jews and Jewish law, which said that there should be no one left hanging on a tree overnight, the soldiers come. And they find Jesus surprisingly dead. So a spear is thrust up into his side, and blood and water flow out of his tortured body. Blood that washes us clean. However, the two thieves are still writhing on their crosses, and to hasten their death, their legs are broken. How savage. And in the short space that thief who called on Jesus to remember him is meeting him in paradise. Jesus always keeps his promises. As we think about this final, almost final scene for this Jewish day, beginning with the Passover, at the evening, and now the evening approaching, and Sabbath about to be entered. A friend of Jesus, a secret friend, Joseph of Arimathea, goes and asks that he might care for the body of his dear Lord, Jesus. And that wish is granted. Hurriedly, before the beginning of Sabbath at sunset, he and another friend, a surprising friend, this friend's name is Nicodemus. He's also now a secret friend of Jesus. We met Nicodemus in John chapter 3. I'm going to speak about that one day, but he's the Pharisee who came at night, wanted to speak to Jesus, wanted to hear Jesus. And now we meet him again. This is the second time. And now he is a follower of Jesus, a friend of Jesus. And he's come with spices. Joseph has got the traditional cloths to wrap Jesus in. And so these two friends of Jesus gently prepare their Saviour's battered body. And I was thinking about this, they were preparing it for this battered body's Sabbath rest. As they lay him in a tomb. But it's Friday, Good Friday, but Sunday's coming. Sunday's coming. So we leave Jesus' body at this point as the day closes. But Sunday is coming. And Sunday is coming for us. I invite you to be here. When we can celebrate the most incredible event, when the Lord of glory is raised. What a glorious day. Our hope lies in a resurrected Lord. As Paul says, if this is not true, then we're the most deluded and sad people of all. But Jesus rose. But for now, we leave his body in its Sabbath rest, and we anticipate Sunday. John will be leading the service on Sunday, and we will be celebrating together. Diane and I are going to be in Berlin, but our hearts and our thoughts will be here with you as you, along with us, celebrate that Jesus is alive. This 24-hour period, this Jewish day, tumultuous, amazing. But the last thought I want to leave with you is simply this. Love triumphed. Love triumphed that day against all the darkness, all the bitterness, all the cruelty, all the lies, against everything, against our own deceit, our own hearts, our own mistakes, our own deliberate errors. Love has triumphed. Blessed is the Lord.